morning.
Morning, Simon.
So, it's a new year, and I've been listening to a new podcast on which to base an exhortation. So, that's fantastic. And Matthew 23, which Leo very kindly agreed to read for us, sits nicely alongside it, in my opinion, although some are going to find the links quite tenuous. It's certainly better to base an exhortation on than Genesis chapter 36, which Leo did not select.
You didn't ask me.
No.
I asked you.
Genesis 36 is the generations of Esau.
It's, I asked you.
Very, very tough for an exhortation, that one. So the podcast that I've been listening to is called The Surprising Rebirth of a Belief in God. Presented by a chap by the name of Justin Brierley, and it sits alongside a book of the same name, and the blurb, or the précis of it, is as follows. Justin Brierley has been hosting high-profile debate between Christians, atheists and agnostics for nearly two decades. This book tells the story of how the conversation has changed in recent years. Beginning with the rise and fall of new atheism, Justin shows why a new set of secular thinkers are turning away from the materialist non-story of reality as they reconsider how the Christian story speaks to today's meaning crisis. Featuring conversations with Jordan Peterson, Tom Holland, Douglas Murray and more, The Surprising Rebirth of Belief in God also tells the stories of many thinkers who have crossed the line to faith as adult converts. Despite many predicting the death of Christianity, we may yet see the sea of faith return in our generation. But will the church be ready? So, interesting premise for a book, and the podcast is very good so far. I'm only five or so episodes in. But there are some things that I found particularly interesting, particularly as referenced there, the rise and fall of new atheism, as it was called. And then I also wondered about the larger causes of the fall from Christianity in the first place, and I think Matthew chapter 23 does a good job of explaining some of that. So, new atheism advocates the view that superstition, religion and irrationalism should simply not be tolerated. The name that you are probably most familiar with is Richard Dawkins, who wrote The God Delusion. The movement was deemed new because it went further than simply not believing in God and set out that those who did were to be the targets of ridicule. This movement was active from about the late 2000s and is now considered effectively defunct. The issue, I believe, mainly is shown for us in this parable of Jesus earlier in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 43. When an unclean spirit comes out of a person, it roams through waterless places looking for rest, but does not find any. Then it says, I'll go back to my house that I came from. Returning, it finds the house vacant, swept, and put in order. Then it goes and brings with it seven other spirits more evil than itself, and they enter and settle down there. As a result, that person's last condition is worse than the first. That's how it will also be with this evil generation. Now, whilst this parable talks about a bad thing being removed and how emptiness is a problem, the same is true for good things too. The main thrust, in effect, is that emptiness is a problem. Or, as it is often simplified, nature abhors a vacuum. So atheism tore down a belief in God and theoretically raised a scientific and technological ethos in its place. The issue with this is really only being noticed now, though, because what was actually torn down was a sense of meaning or purpose. And we see the results of that all around us in the rampant materialism and individualism. Several conversations with Dad for over a long time, that the main reason for expressing an atheistic view is because the opposite requires a response. That is, if you acknowledge the existence of God, then you are required to do something about it. And so it is interesting that while that was very much their aim, it has created a whole different set of problems. Not having to acknowledge a higher power frees you up to do what you want with no regard for the consequences. But it seems that we have been created with an innate requirement for purpose, as Paul writes to the Romans in chapter 1, verse 20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead. So that they are without excuse, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. So man replaced the belief in God with a worship of his creation instead, because you can't have a belief in nothing. Now my suspicion is, more recently at least, that the warnings of Matthew 23 contribute to the mindset that people want to go and look for something else. So Matthew chapter 23 and verse 2. The scribes and the Pharisees are seated in the chair of Moses. Therefore, do whatever they tell you and observe it. But don't do what they do, because they do not practice what they teach. They tie up heavy loads that are hard to carry and put them on people's shoulders, but they themselves aren't willing to lift a finger to move them. They do everything to be seen by others. They enlarge their phylacteries and lengthen their tassels. The church at large has always been pharisaical in this regard, as large organisations tend to be. Despite the best of intentions, most human organised bodies tend toward chaos, and therefore a do as I say and not as I do becomes necessary. We also become very good at preaching the actions and forgetting the reasoning. Maybe we get stuck on the milk and forget to move on to the meat. Matthew 23 and verse 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You pay a tenth of mint, dill, and cumin, and yet you have neglected the important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. These things should have been done without neglecting the others. Blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but gulp down a camel. And I think we can understand why this happened as well. When we look back on the law given to Moses, we can struggle to identify what it's teaching and instead look purely at what the children of Israel had to do. A book like Ruth is far easier for us to understand because it shows Boaz living out the principles of the law and how that benefited those on whom it was enacted. Matthew 23 contains a number of warnings about how organisations should behave, including talking about money and how the Pharisees would enlarge their pockets at the expense of everyone else, another facet that would probably be relatively easy to indict most organised religion on. How quickly the church moved on from the beginning of Acts is really quite depressing, Acts 4 and 32. Now the entire group of those who believed were of one heart and mind, and no one claimed that any of his possessions were his own, but instead they held everything in common. But we know how quickly that went wrong, as this record is immediately followed by the account of Ananias and Sapphira. Matthew 23, however, does finish with a glimmer of hope. For I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." And that is what sets us apart. Having a future hope gives life meaning. The removal of any plan for the future makes for a futile existence, as beautifully articulated by Solomon at the beginning of Ecclesiastes. Chapter 1 and verse 2. Absolute futility, says the teacher. Absolute futility, everything is futile. What does a person gain for all his efforts that he labours at under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets. Panting, it hurries back to the place where it rises. Gusting to the south, turning to the north, turning, turning goes the wind, and the wind returns in its cycles. All the streams flow to the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome, more than anyone can say. The eye is not satisfied by seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Can one say about anything, "Look, this is new"? It has already existed in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of those who came before, and of those who come after, there will also be no remembrance by those who follow them. The contrast between the start and the end of Ecclesiastes is a parallel to the atheistic versus theistic life and its associated purpose and meaning. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. When all has been heard, the conclusion of the matter is this: fear God and keep his commandments, because this is for all humanity. For God will bring every act to judgment, including every hidden thing, whether good or evil. So as we now remember the sacrifice of our Lord Jesus, the one who has facilitated the hope of life to come, and as we go into the week ahead, let us be glad that we have a purpose and meaning in our lives. Matthew 26 and verse 29. But I tell you, I will not drink from this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom.